Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, your journey into personal growth. The splendor of any decision is after you've made it. All that remains to be seen are its consequences. My name is Ken Primus. I am your host. Here at Threads of Enlightenment, we talk about the principles of self-development and personal growth. By having conversation with people who have walked through their journey of personal growth. We believe that everyone at some point in their life will have to deal with one or more of these principles to have the privilege of focusing on their self-development as humans. These principles, when applied, can help you to become the best self possible. Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. As usual, once our guest presents, we then turn it to them and we extend with gratitude always to every single one of our guests because we know the preciousness of their time and their insight and their lives that they have stopped by to visit us and to impart their wisdom and knowledge. And it is my pleasure to welcome David to our show. David, thank you for coming to Threads of Enlightenment.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome,
it's a pleasure,
sir,
to be here.
So tell us, introduce us a little about what you've done. I know that you're an author and that you have a couple of other projects in play right now. Tell the people what those are so we can get a chance to see what you have created today. And then we are going to take this wonderful journey and take you back from your family life to today.
Oh, good. It's I love the theme of the program, and I appreciate that your audience, the folks out here that are listening to us, are seeking something, mm-hmm. right? Or they wouldn't be here. And so they're a little bit open, right? So we got to have an open mind. And so I really appreciate that, and it's my goal. My goal, first of all, to love you and to be of service. And so I'm not going to go way back. I just had my 62nd birthday.
Congratulations.
And I feel very blessed the things I've been able to be a part of throughout my life. But to kind of go fast forward a little bit, I was working at a community health center. And that's they call them federally qualified health centers or community health centers or clinics. So they're about, in the United States, there are about, I think, about 1,300 or 1,400 of these all across the country now. And I was working in a rural area. Lots of migrant and seasonal farm workers, and then lots of, you know, people who weren't. But we had this wonderful opportunity to build a new health center. It had like the original building that had been built, and we had grown like by two times. And, you know, we were making offices out of closets and, you know, I mean, I was the CEO and my office was upstairs in the heater room. And so we had outgrown it, right? And we had such wonderful people that I was able to work with. But as we had this opportunity to build a new building, I thought, we're going to spend $16 million to build this. Because it's going to be more than twice the size of the old facility. And I thought, why would we do this and build something that's the same old, same old? It just didn't make any sense. The clinical model that we had built had the patient right in the center. And they weren't like peripheral over here. The old medical model in the United States was, I'm the doctor, you're the patient, and you're a good patient. I'll pat you on the head if you do what I tell you to. That's the old model. And the model that we were trying to create was, you are the patient. Nobody knows you and your life as a whole person better than you do. And nobody else is responsible for your life. So we are here to support you. And when I say we, that might mean that you have a primary care provider. It might mean that you have a dentist or a hygienist. It might be that you have a therapist or a community health worker. Or, you know, we had this really broad range of positions designed to serve individuals with their individual needs. And the idea was we would flex, not you flex, but we would flex around what you needed. And it might be very little or it might be a lot. And that's okay, right? Because everybody's where they're at. And there's no reason judging ourselves or getting too hard on ourselves, because the fact is that we are at where we're at. And all we have is today and how we're looking forward philosophically here. So I'm going to step back a little bit. So we had this wonderful team of folks. You know, we had nurses and medical assistants and physicians and therapists and all these people as a part of the team. And I tried to find the most interested architect, for example. I mean, most of the architects kind of settle for the status quo. They don't want to be innovative. So, for example, well, again, I'm going to get a little too detailed. But anyways, so we were doing this, and I had this epiphany. Yeah. This is my wow moment. And it was that got all these cool services and all these wonderful people and this, I think, a really beautiful model designed around how human beings work. But unless we help the patient to effectively fill the role of captain of the care team, then all of this effort, all of this time and energy and money spent was going to be for naught, because it really was built upon the individual being able to fill that role. And so then I started studying intently in between, you know, working 10 or 12 hours a day about, well, what would help people be the captain? How will we help them function in that role more effectively? And I was studying specifically models of change. And there's a lot of different models of change out there. And I had different books, you know, and papers and research and all this stuff. And I talked to anybody who would talk to me. and I realized it all comes down to personal or intrinsic motivation. And we think about motivation, you know, if you get onto like right wing talk radio, you know, they think motivation is a character trait, and either you've got it or you don't. And you're either lazy or you're industrious, or you are smart or dumb, or you are trying hard, or you've given up, or, you know, there's a lot of black and white. But what I learned was that really, personal motivation is a set of skills. And to my gratification, to my, it just made me joyful almost. I realized that any of my patients could become the captain of the team, and probably much more important, the captain of their own life, because we cede so much control to everybody else. And I think serving others is a part of what we're here to do. But you've got to build your foundation first. And it's like helping somebody, right? If you're at the bottom of the pit and there's a ladder and the person you're trying to help is at the bottom of the pit, it's much more difficult. Versus if you're at the top of the ladder, to reach down and give them a hand and help them come up the ladder on their own, you know, they have to take each step by themselves, but we can give them a hand. And it's a lot easier to do if you've got, you know, if you're up above. And so what we wanted to do was create a process and understand those principles so that people could elevate themselves to the role of captain in their life, build these foundations, which has all of these amazing, amazing benefits for the individual.
That's awesome. I want to get back to that, because that's what we are about, learning about those principles and those tools that will help you and I, or an individual, to move from one space to another. You mentioned the community health centers, and before we had we were talking a little. The community health centers are very close to my heart. My background is healthcare, and I worked with the state of Florida with them very closely, and doing a lot of events and a lot of things that I worked internally, designing their system, to help them to achieve the goals that they wanted. And I came about that in the onset of managed healthcare, when because there was this increase or this phenomenon amongst people using the emergency room as their general practice office. And so we wanted to get a chance to bring them into the community center, educate them as to first contact. And that was the birth, quote unquote, of managed healthcare, why it came about. But I was a part of that system. And so when you're talking about it, I get really excited because I know the people that are in there. I know how hard they work. I know the population that they serve. And you have to have that servant heart to be a part of that population. So I took my hat off to you for doing that and being a part of that. So what we do here, David, is and I'll bring you back to that. Trust me, I'll bring you back to there because that is important where you're at. But I want to get a little glimpse about you as to how did you get to a place of the CEO? What spaces, how did you move through your life? Things that you had to face that you will encounter in some of those people that you were dealing with as you began to your study. Tell me about some of those. How was your family life, and how did you progress from there, college and all that stuff? Just a brief conversation on that.
I was raised a pretty, I don't know if you want to call it average. I mean, my dad worked in construction. You know, my mom was a mm-hmm. stay-at-home mom. I have two brothers. I remember, so, you know, and we yeah, all have yes. challenges, right? I think it's so important. And as one of the, there are three core themes, you know, that comprise intrinsic mm-hmm. or personal motivation. One of those core themes is this idea yes. of self-compassion. And we're all a part of a common humanity. And so often when we're stressed or when we're feeling under pressure, if you will, mm-hmm. we feel alone. We feel like we're the only person who's ever gone through this or who's going through this in our own way. And as we all are unique, but the challenges we have are, generally speaking, yeah. not that unique. And there are people here to support us. And I learned that pretty early. My dad was a good man, I think. Mm-hmm. He had his challenges. He drank too much. And at some point, he lost my mother's trust, which is tragic. And, you know, I was mm-hmm. 10 years old, but my mom divorced my dad. You know, so she's a single mom with three boys. And, you know, it's all the struggles, you know, that a single parents have. And she dated, which was difficult because none of us boys liked anybody that she dated. and I remember, we were dirt poor. I mean, you know, we just were. Mom did her best, but, you know, she'd been a stay-at-home mom. She didn't have any schooling or, I mean, our lives are rich with texture. But to cut the story a little bit short, mm-hmm. I was mad. If you'd asked me, I would not have said I was mad, but I was always losing mm-hmm. my temper. And I remember we moved into a little apartment and we had these rubber horseshoes, solid mm-hmm. rubber horseshoes. And I was mad at my brother. So I threw it at him down the hall and I threw it hard enough. What was I, 10 or 11 probably by this point, that it stuck into the door. So it busted through the, cheap doors, cheap apartment. And you know, I mean, if it had hit him, it would have been an emergency room visit probably. I was mad. We weren't far from, we lived in mm-hmm. the Seattle area in Washington State. So we were near Puget Sound, a big body of salt water. And I would be angry. And I remember even in the middle of the night, sometimes I would just get up and I would walk down 3 or 4 blocks to the waterfront on these big rocks next to railroad tracks. And I would, the waves, the action of the waves, you can kind of picture that sound, was very centering for me. And I was just mad, you know, why did my parents divorce? You know, what's going on? Why did you have to drink someone? All those kinds of things. And so my mom remarried, and she married a man who, bless his heart, was a sweet man. Was. He passed away a few years ago, but he was a full-on alcoholic, unfortunately. And I remember mom came to me. I hadn't been married for a long time. She came to us, three boys. We were shared a room, bunk beds, and, you know, and then a separate bed. And she said, we might have to leave all of a sudden, maybe in the middle of the night. And if we do, I need you to not worry about what your stuff is. We're going to grab clothes and what you need very quietly, and we're going to get on the car and we're going to leave. And it never happened. I'm grateful. But things were, you know, that bad. And what changed things around for my stepdad and my mom was that missionaries came to their door from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And they had come before, but my mom had always said no. But they were, I think, this is my words, my language now, we're kind of desperate. Talk about, you know, kind of pivotal things that change the direction of our lives. And so they studied, you know, they prayed, and they became convinced that this was a good thing for them, that this was the Church of Jesus Christ. And they joined that church. And I remember I was 13 at this point, I think. And I, you know, I was 13. I was still mad and I knew everything. You know, what's the bumper sticker? Quick, ask a teenager a question. Well, I still know everything.
How did you overcome that?
And so,
David, how, because I know I had that same journey with one of the things that I had to overcome was anger. And what was your pivotal point that caused you to look at yourself? Because I had that moment, and I'll never forget that moment. And that caused you to say, wait a minute, what is going on here? And started making that pivot and started to turn. Because, you know, it's like a big ship. It takes a little while because it's emotion has become such a part of your day-to-day that it takes a little time. And some people always want instantaneous satisfaction. But when you're turning a ship, I tell people, and your life is a ship in some cases, it'll take time and just be patient. And as you said, you got to learn how to love yourself and walk through those aspects and being kind to yourself and all those other things. But what was yours, David, that caused you to go, wait a minute, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I told my parents, this is good for you, right? This is great. I was not raised with any real religion. I think we went to a couple of different churches just because my mom was desperate and you got to give your kids some kind of foundation, but we never stuck with anything. And if you'd said, do you believe in God? I would have said, I don't know. Right. I just have thought about it. And so what I saw though was in my mom and my dad was that they changed and it was relatively abrupt. And I remember, you know, again, your parents don't tell you everything growing up. So if there's kids listening, just know, then that's probably okay, frankly. But, you know, my mom said, or my dad said was, or my dad in particular, my stepdad, he said, you know, I probably snuck drinks because I was a full-on alcoholic. And a part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is that we don't drink alcohol. Right. That's one of the, it's called part of what's called the word of wisdom. And so what I saw in them was in my youthful anger was that their lives changed. And not only just kind of their lives, they physically, there was a physical change in them that I could not ignore. And what it led to was over about a year period, my heart was softening because I saw, you know, they are not fixed at a point in time. They're changing physically, spiritually, emotionally. And I couldn't deny that it was a good thing. And I started investigating and ended up joining that church myself. And 3 years later, I served a mission for 2 years. When I was 19, I served a mission for 2 years. It totally changed the direction of my life.
That's awesome.
I mean, if you'd asked me before that, you know, what I wanted out of life, frankly, it would have been, well, I want to make a lot of money. And, you know, retire young and, you know, live on a yacht. And, you know, it was very selfish. And
well, that's
very
short-sighted. I think that's one of the global programming of society that they tell everyone, you know. And so we all have that same thing within us. But I, like I said, on the onset of this conversation, I think the greatest gift that can be given to a human being is when he or she becomes a teacher, which to me, they are a servant. This is a place of servanthood. You are looking at the needs of someone, you're focused on that more so than yourself. And it brings a tremendous joy that is incredible, that is so deep that you cannot explain it, but you can just experience it. And so I try to tell people that once you get through your mess, you will begin to be used in order to reach back to people that need assistance to move them from where they're at. So, David, here you are. You guys are looking, you're setting up this new model, because I want to get back here. You're setting up this new model of human behavior to help understand how one moves. And now you and your team are about to bring this knowledge, these tools, to assist the population. How did that go about? And walk me through a situation with one of your patients that you remember, how you took them and then began to infuse the knowledge that you gained from your study.
Well, so that's a good question. And I don't know, I'm going to be able to answer you very well. Because I ended up getting fired shortly after this epiphany that I had. I had a fundamental disagreement with my board. And I lost the argument, I guess I would say. One of the ways that I tried to do it, so I was gone by the time the building was built. You know, by the time we implemented the model, you know, I was gone. So I like to think about this in, I don't want to say this, in like layers, if you will. And so one of the things I was trying to do kind of as a part of a result of the research I started to do was I created a small nonprofit called the Columbia Gorge Wellness Alliance. And what we recognized was a lot of people were struggling with mental health challenges. You know, depression, anxiety, addictions of various kinds. And there were just people having a lot of struggles. And it was a part of the milieu that we were in. And what we wanted to do as a kind of as part of one of these principles, I talked about our common humanity. So we thought what we want to do is provide in the milieu. So I think of like your wonderful podcast. You know, you're trying to put a drop of water and create a wave of enlightenment. I mean, you know, threads of enlightenment, right? And so we thought what we need is we need more drops of enlightenment. Those are your words, but I can't remember the words we used, but you know, of a sense that people are feeling alone. And so what we wanted to do was, it was really about like public service announcements, mm-hmm. if you will. But it was very targeted to specific conditions. And so we didn't want to hire actors or basketball stars. Yeah. We didn't have any money anyway. So what we wanted to do was say, create messaging kind of by individuals mm-hmm. that are in these struggles who had overcome, much like my stepdad who overcame mm-hmm. alcoholism and then spent the next 20 years helping other people realize that you feel yeah. like you're in a hole and you feel like you can't get out of that hole. But, you know, I was in there myself
yeah.
and I got out. This is how I got out. How you yeah. get out might be different, and that's okay. But what's important is that you have a seed of hope yeah. that it's possible, mm-hmm. right? And so we created this messaging that basically, you know, brief, short things that you could put on YouTube that could be on, you know, mm-hmm. in social media, and that basically said, hi, I'm Dave, and I've had these struggles, and yeah. you're not alone.
Yeah.
You can have hope. You can rise above whatever, you know, circumstances that you're in right now. And it was very short and it was very brief. And the whole idea was, and then, you know, yeah, you could yeah. contact mm-hmm. and, you know, there was yeah. a way to get some follow-up. But really, we just wanted to have something that was positive out there that was in the milieu. And we thought, so this is how I thought about it anyways. If Coca-Cola was going to market their product mm-hmm. in a new market, and let's say Thailand, just to pick a random mm-hmm. place. And how would they do that? You know, would they like have bland trucks with nothing on them that said, we're ashamed of our stuff, but we're going to try to sell it on the side of the street? Yeah. And no, what they're going to do is they're going to put up billboards yeah. and they're going to find local celebrities say that it's great stuff.
Yeah.
And they're going to create a marketing campaign and they're going to be on TV and the radio and on Facebook and on all over the mm-hmm. place, right? They are going to promote what they think is important
yeah.
because that's how they make their living. Well, if we have an idea that's this important, we wanted to promote it just like you would Coca-Cola. Yeah. Because that's how you get the message out. That's how you get people to be from a space of nothing, right? A space of inaction mm-hmm. to the first stage yeah. of change, which is kind of a little bit of self-awareness,
yes.
right? And then a little bit of awareness of something that maybe raises my status. Mm-hmm. And you start to build on this. And that's what we want to start building, those rungs on that ladder. So that in yeah. people's mental models, they go, huh.
Yeah, that's the key.
Anyways, I don't have a good story about an individual we helped. I wish I had. And I know there are. I'm sure there are.
They're out there because that information that you're talking about is designed. There's this little saying that I say, David, to people that everyone needs to get what I say their statement of faith. That statement of faith is can be, you can locate that. Usually most people will locate it in hardship. And I take a lot of stories out of the Bible and show this example because a lot of people are familiar with. There's a story with a woman with the issue of blood. And she was a rich woman. She had money. And she spent her money, all her money. She's broke. And she's in a place of desperation. We have another gentleman by the name of Jairus. His daughter is laying dead. She's sick, laying dead. And he's in a space of desperation. And so desperation, I think, causes us to define our statement of faith. And I'll explain to you what I mean by that. It is that phrase, that thing that you will say within yourself, because the scripture says, that's the woman with the issue of blood said, she said within herself, if I can touch the hem of his garment, I'm going to get what I want. So she made a declaration. Business, we call it a business plan. We have a business plan or a vision. Business cannot survive without a vision. They have their declaration of faith. This is what they believe. And so this woman in your desperation, you'll trust me, your belief system gets clear because all the other things are tossed aside. And you, she said within herself, in that place of desperation, if I could touch him. And based on what that statement of faith, she then had the corresponding action to make her move. She took one step to get up and go against the crowd. We read in the history declaration of that story. So she was fighting to get to the crowd. She didn't want to touch him. Her declaration was the hem. So when she touched him, thousands of people hanging around on him, and he turns around and yells, "Who touched me?" And so I tell people, your declaration of faith has to be strong and powerful enough that it'll stop God in the middle of what is going on, and he's going to go, "Who touched me?" And so the other story is Jairus. Jairus comes to him. He says, "Master, my daughter she's close to sick, to dying. She's laying out. Lay your hands on her, and she shall be healed and live." His boys came to him and say, "Hey, don't bother the master anymore. She's dead. Just call it a day, and you know, forget about it." In the middle of that, of dealing with this woman with the issue of blood, Jesus heard that, and immediately he said to that man, "Don't disconnect from your belief system." He says, he stopped him. He says, "Don't change your confession." So you got to find that statement of faith. And in this, it's located in that place of desperation because it crystallizes our desire and it makes clear the things that we want, what we want. And once the scripture says, decide a thing and it shall be established. And I believe that most men and women, when we, your perfect example is your parents, they decided a thing and they took the steps and they move and it changed their life, changed yours, changed all around you and everything. And so we have to come to that place, David, of sometimes I call it sometimes it's I hate the terminology, but it gives a good picture. Sometimes we have to go and sit with pigs like the prodigal son. It was when he was sitting there when he got his revelation and he goes, "Wait a minute." And he made a declaration as well. "I can eat better at my dad's house. I'm going to get up from this pigsty here and I'm going to move." And so the dark places, I tell people, don't be afraid of it. It'll crystallize what you want. When God looked on the mess, he said, "I want light, let there be," you know, so it'll crystallize what you want. And so the principles that you were teaching people, that was some powerful stuff that you were teaching them, David, I guess, to become aware that you're not alone, number one. And number two, that you can get out. What is your hope? What is your faith, your belief system? What do you want out of this situation? And then once you decide, and you'll make the decision.
I think that's exactly right. I believe that these become foundations, yes, that we build on. And I use the metaphor of so I worked in, a rural area with a lot of agriculture. Mm-hmm. And I like using the metaphor of a cherry tree.
Yeah.
Kind of thinking about the milieu that we live in, right? We live in a modern world that uses a mechanical metaphor. Yeah. But the mechanical metaphor has terrible limitations, mm-hmm, frankly. Because it's all about driving things and, things fitting together and the machine working smoothly. And what it does is the mechanical metaphor loses the very nature of what we are, because we are a part of nature. And so I like to think of it as like a cherry tree. As an individual, I'm like a cherry tree. And so if I build my tree, if I build myself with a weak roots and a weak trunk, because I'm always focused on what I want to get done, right? And that's what we tend to do. And most of what we see in the world is about how to get more done, how to be more effective, right? How to have a bigger harvest, mm-hmm, a greater abundance, right? That's what we're focused on, but we don't focus on the trunk and we don't focus on the roots. And so what happens then is that when we have that moment of trial, that moment of stress, and in nature, it could be a drought, it could be a heavy rainstorm, it could be a bad, you know, bad weather. It doesn't get warm enough. Mm-hmm. It could be all these things, right? In our own lives, it can be things like I'm having trouble in a relationship. It can be things like I got fired. It could be things like my business has failed or a pandemic or, you know, go on and on. I mean, the variety of things that can be challenging are virtually limitless. It could be health issues. It could be so many things, a crisis of faith. But if we've always focused on the harvest, but never on the core, the foundations, then in those trials, we tend to blow over, right? We tend to not have the strength, and we use terms like resilience and perseverance, faith, obedience, you know, all these kinds of things. And we tend to fail then, and we fail fairly catastrophically a lot of times. And so what I'm convinced of is that we need to focus at least as much on becoming as we do on accomplishing. And in the process of becoming, we're building a strong trunk and strong roots. And we may not produce quite as much, you know, every single year, but what we will do is we will produce as much as we can sustain reasonably. And we will produce and we will have a harvest even in drought, even in a rainstorm, even in cold weather, because we have the strong roots, the strong trunk that we can draw on. And the principles in my book, while they are not religious, I mean, the book is, it is not religious. I felt because so many people just aren't, right? Yeah. They're just not. And so I wanted the book to be consistent with eternal principles that are taught in faith, but that are also understandable from enduring principles that anybody could, you know, hold on to and say, that makes sense. For example, the first principle is to make our own values explicit. Mm-hmm. And the first chapter guides the reader through a process. It's very simple, and it doesn't cost anything, to establish what are my values, my core personal values that become a strength and a source of well-being, a source of motivation, a source of focus and clarity. And then the second principle is self-awareness. Because if you pick a place on a map and you say, I want to go to this place, maybe it's a restaurant or a museum or a temple or, you know, whatever, whatever it is, I really want to go there. I want to visit. That's my goal, right? That's my outcome. Well, if you have absolutely no idea where you're at, you will find it's nearly impossible to map a course to that place. Because you got to know where you are.
Absolutely.
Can I get this on the screen? Yeah. Where you are, and you got to know where you're going. And then you map a course you know, to get you there. And so that requires, you know, in our personal lives, that requires self-awareness. And then it requires feedback, because inevitably you're trying to get to there, but you get distracted and you end up over here someplace and you got to correct the course and move back down. And maybe you got distracted again, you're down there and you got to get back, you know, moving in the right course. So then those are the first three principles of the book: your values as a foundation, self-awareness, and a healthy relationship to feedback, right? We got to overcome high school. And that, you know, D we got on our report card, or whatever a bad grade did is for you. For my wife, a B was a bad grade. She was just traumatized if she got a B. For me, I was pretty happy with a B. But a D was traumatic. And so whatever it is for you, right, it's going to be different person to person. You got to have a healthy relationship with feedback, which is basically just giving you information so that you can adjust your course, adjust your path, and get back on track as the captain of your own life to be moving in the direction that you want to move to become the person that you want to become. And then it's obvious there's 10 principles, and those are just the first three, but they fit together so beautifully. And they're so simple, and it doesn't cost any money to do it. I mean, and that's the
I want to tell anyone that is listening to this, grab his books. I was actually looking at it. Go and buy his books, because they, you need to those principles that he was laying out, those first three principles, is absolutely correct. Those are the process by which one becomes what I say a mature human spirit. We gain control of our life. We gain control of our thoughts, which then governs our behaviors. And we you follow those stages, and sometimes it gets difficult, but it is your roadmap to becoming who you are and who you want to be. And I suggest that you guys grab those copies and get in touch. I'm going to leave David's information so you guys can reach him too, so that you guys can talk to him if you need to. And he made a couple of statements. He said, "You're not alone." And that's one of the reasons why I have this podcast. I want people to come on and so that you can hear your story within that conversation and to alert you that you're not alone. And the person that is here on that conversation is willing to talk with you and to guide you and walk with your hands. You guys have heard me said it 100 million times on these shows that I have. That book from David, when you purchase that book, is you're having a personal conversation with him. You are relaxed in your space. You are reading his wisdom, his insight. You're having a conversation. And I know, David, I was reading that you're working on the audio book as well, so they could listen in the car while they're driving and hearing you talk to them and encourage them and tell them that you're not alone, that these are the principles that in my studies that I've seen people great and small take it and change their life and become more mature, as they say, smarter, wiser. We could all use those fun words, you know, but it is a pleasure for us to see when someone take those advice and apply it, because they're all proven principles, David, that it goes beyond religion. It goes beyond anything, and it lodges within one's belief system and changes them forever.
Thank you. I think you're exactly right. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about attaching your life to enduring great mm-hmm. principles, because they are, it's just like gravity,
yeah.
right? Gravity determines what happens and how, you know, a plane flies or it mm-hmm. doesn't, right? So the plane has to know that there's gravity. And then you have the Bernoulli principle, which yep. gives you lift. And you have to understand those natural principles in order to have success
yes.
in life. If you want to have yes. a plane anyway, or if you don't want to fall off the cliff, right? You don't want to yes. live with that wisdom. And so these are human wisdom. You know, the way that human beings have worked for since yeah. the dawn of time, and they will until, you know, when our great-great-great-grandchildren mm-hmm. are, you know, old. I mean, these principles will apply yep. through any culture, through any belief system, through any, they don't require an yeah. education level. They don't require a certain income level. They apply to everyone. All of us. And what we will see is some people will cheat, right? Some people mm-hmm. can cheat, right? But do you want to live your life hoping that you can yeah. cheat your way through it? You know, that doesn't seem like a very solid foundation. I mean, the vast majority of us, and I don't want to be discouraging, or we will not yeah. be rich or famous. Sorry. You know, the reason that you can only list a handful or two of rich and famous people is because there just aren't that many of them. Right. And yet there are pushing 8 billion people on the planet. Yeah. Every single one of us can live a fulfilling, happy, satisfying life.
I agree.
Without being rich or famous. Yes. And it better be true, because that's the place we've, you know, most of us find ourselves in. So what are those enduring principles that we can hold on to create our foundations on? That help us have that life in our perhaps very challenging circumstances.
Yeah.
And I think that gives me a lot of hope, and I hope it does if you're listening.
That is awesome. David, I want to thank you for stopping by Threads of Enlightenment and giving us such wonderful insights and knowledge to help us to grow to become better human spirits. And as I mentioned to you guys, please get in touch with him, buy his books, because the principles will help you to get what you want. That statement of faith, he talked about finding out those things. What is it that you really want? It's like a plane. I tell people that statement that you make, that desire that you want, it's like your guiding principle that will make you get up when times get hard. It's there to guide you. Like the plane, it's the compass. That plane never flies in straight. It goes off, and that comfort, it brings it back in, and so that that person is able to land the plane. And so that compass is what your desire is. Find what it is so that it can guide you in the hard times when times get tough, and you're able to take a step here and there. But David, again, I want to thank you so much for visiting us here at Threads of Enlightenment. I thank you so much, sir, for coming by.
Thank you, Ken. It's been a pleasure.
Everyone who's listening to this podcast, we hope to continually help you to learn how to embrace moments of darkness, because it is in the darkness that we learn how to develop and use our abilities to truly see those parts of ourselves, often invisible to us, in the light. It becomes your responsibility to navigate through all of your trials to find out who you truly are and begin your journey to loving yourself, which is possibly one of the most difficult things you will ever do in your life. To love yourself and to find the real you. But always remember to enjoy the journey. Thank you for coming by. Please subscribe. And if you can support us financially, we deeply appreciate it. You can do this by hitting the heart button. Until next time, invite your family, friends, neighbors, anyone that you can. You can hear us on Buzzsprout, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Overcast, and many more.